robots and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm John Lobster. We're out of the shitter.
Thank God.
Thank God. We're going to talk about a good movie. This week, Legends Podcast goes south of the border for Denis Villeneuve's Sicario. The border is just another line to cross when Emily Blunt, Benicio Del Toro, and Josh Brolin team up to take down a Mexican cartel kingpin.
The best thing about this movie is that it's not really about taking down a Mexican cartel kingpin.
No.
It's about these people in that situation.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin being an asshole.
Wearing flip-flops.
See, I don't know if I really would consider him an asshole.
Thanos showing up. Trying to fuck with shit.
Really? Yeah. Listen.
Telling the collector what to do.
Is he an asshole? True. Yes, he is an asshole. But
does he do it for the right thing? Yeah.
Okay.
But he's still an asshole.
Every time they did something that was really questionable, they made it very poignant to have a scene with Emily right. Blunt or someone reflecting on what just went down or how bad it is. Yeah. Her looking up all those things in the newspaper or online, and it just. They really drove home how fucked up the drug violence is down there.
Yep, and by having the leitmotiv of the little boy wanted to play with his father,
yeah,
it drives that home so badly. A little bit like Broom Boy, if you think about it.
Did you think that the father was gone already the first time the kid was asking the mom, where's dad?
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. I didn't think we would see them again at the end.
Yeah, no, that's kind of bookends the movie. I mean, it's really interesting the way the movie shapes up. And I think you go into it with one type of expectation, but it really kind of subverts what this genre is. And again, this is a pretty broad genre of films. We were talking before the show. You can make comparisons to Fast and the Furious. You could do Breaking Bad. Like, lots of shows have done these types of stories, or movies have done these types of stories. But this one definitely lives in that gray area of what ends justify the what means.
Yeah. It's like you're almost rooting for the bad guy at the end, you know?
Right. Well, you're almost
You kind of are.
You're rooting for the bad guy, but on the other hand, you're rooting for a bad guy that you can control and is in some way predictable.
A bad guy that has some modicum of a moral code.
Right, right. Rather than pure anarchy.
Right, and just money.
And it's really kind of an interesting distinction to make. And Juarez has calmed down a bit since this places it. Yeah, this places it probably around 2010. And even by the time the movie came out, it was calming down, but still not a place I'd want to go. And it's very interesting because in 2015, you could read this movie one way. And I think in 2018, in Donald Trump's America,
oh my God,
you could read it a very, very different way. That's really interesting to me.
Well, yeah, that's one of the part that they're new reading, because there is that old border, I'll say, discussion to be nice right now. So it gives you a new vision of that tension that they have all the time.
To me, this was more, it just happened to be on our border. This could have been another story with CIA agents in Cuba or, you know, anywhere in Europe.
And you could have done the same story in the Cold War.
Right.
About some, you know, you want to have someone installed as the leader of a country who they might be a dictator, but they're our dictator.
Right, exactly. They're the evil you can control, or the evil
Yeah,
well, that's really happened, but you know, that's another.
Or, you know, since it's Denis Villeneuve, he could have adapted it to the maple syrup cartel of Canada.
The maple syrup cartel. Very true.
Yep.
Super Troopers, exactly, right?
Exactly. Which I'm not a fan, by the way.
Oh.
Shocker.
We'll make you a fan with the new one, I hope. I guess the focus of this film is Emily Blunt's character. And it's kind of interesting that she is the hero and kind of the conscience of the film, But at the end of it, it is not a victory for her. Like, she is chewed up and spat out.
I'm going to fight a little bit what you say. She's the only reason why we think of her as the protagonist is because she is the eyes of us. I mean, we learn with her. We're in the dark with her until someone helps her understand and all that jazz. But the movie's called Sicario. I would argue that Benicio del Toro was the main character.
Well, he's going to be the lead in the sequel.
Well, yeah, Emily Blunt's not in the sequel, so I'm guessing
there's a sequel.
Yeah. This none of the cool people come back, but the writer is writing another one.
Yeah, the writer Taylor Sheridan, who I recognize as an actor from Sons of Anarchy, but who has written, he's written the Hell or High Water and Wind River movies. He wrote this, but yeah, there is a Sicario sequel. I meant to stick the trailer somewhere and forgot with all the other trailers.
We'll find it and throw it on the end.
But there is a trailer out there, and the sequel is going to follow Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro's characters.
Well, the beauty of this of these two characters is that take the character of Emily Blunt, replaced by Agent number 238, with a good personality, because that's why she's working so well. And you can make as many sequels as this as you want, as long as you have Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
This was my first viewing of this, so I for sure thought that her partner, the black guy, was totally in on it. Okay. I thought he was being overly sensitive at first, and then when I saw them walk into the bar and the Punisher was mean mugging the shit out of Emily Blunt, I'm like, okay, well, this guy's gonna be a hitman. And then when he comes up and shakes her partner's hand, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, like all movie. But no.
The movie's well made for that, because you think him, you think maybe Josh Brolin at some point. Yeah. You're thinking other peoples are against her. You never really think of Del Toro. And when you get his story, you become sympathetic with him. So I knew
as soon as he said, you remind me of someone I care about. I thought for a second it was, you know, maybe his ex-wife. I mean, I knew what was going on. You've trained me well enough that he had lost. Sure. Something happened to his wife and or kids. Well,
when you saw him wake up on the plane from a nightmare, you're like, oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
Something bad happened, right?
This movie is really well done to show you and not tell you.
To go back to the partner, if you feel like you've seen him before, Daniel Kaluuya, it's because
Black Mirror.
You would recognize him. Yeah, one from an episode of Black Mirror, but also the Oscar nominated, and he's also nominated for Get Out.
Holy fuck. Okay.
Oh, he's the guy from Get Out. Oh.
Yeah, I just watched that. That's why I'm like, okay, maybe, but wow, good shit.
Yeah. Wow, that's good. That's cool for him. That's a good year for it.
Victor Garber, you'd recognize from Titanic and Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, right away.
And The Punisher also is in it. Yeah. Shane.
Shark Tackle was, he's the guy that works with the other guy. And
he is, yeah.
I was like, yeah, he is. Yeah. He's dead, but he is. Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, good cast rounding this out. Again, one thing that I'm going to go back to probably again and again with this movie is the way that it looks and sounds. Cinematography by Roger Deakins, absolutely top notch. There are scenes in this movie that are haunting, and there are scenes that have a little bit of visual trickery. There's a video game-esque sequence in the film that, at the same time, it's claustrophobic. It's fascinating to watch.
I was about to say, you feel like you're with them in that operation.
It's POV kind of stuff.
And the way Deakins shoots it when it starts, you see the character as shadow on the background, but the bottom of the screen is dark, and they all get into the darkness slowly.
They all walk down into the shadows.
And then you get into the, night goggles.
Well, that's one thing about the whole, every action beat in this, not only, you said the sound on my surround sound was just fucking amazing, so that brought you into it, but every action beat in this is so intense, suspenseful, and just batshit out there.
Like the trip to Juarez and back.
Yeah, back.
So
the trip there gets you pumped up. But when they come back, oh, yeah, they're going to have a border lane open for us. We're going to make it right through. They get like 50 yards in, and it bottlenecks.
I love the fact that when you think about it, nothing really happens. It's just building the tension with cars moving. And when they get back there...
It's a traffic jam. You're making a tense action scene out of a traffic jam. It's the anti-Fast and Furious.
And the shooting is super fast. They shoot first. They kill everyone. It takes 35 seconds. Yeah. We're done. But I feel more tension than in a Fast and Furious chase scene of half an hour.
I like how Del Toro just tells her. Just so matter-of-factly, not even a raised voice, not even excitable. He just says, it won't happen here. It'll happen at the border. Keep an eye out for the state police. They aren't always the good guys. Like, he just ordered a fucking pizza.
Yeah, but that's been our checkup that we're looking all the time. Because we're like, okay, it's written federal police on this car. We go, so we haven't seen the state police. When we saw the state police car by the end, we're like, oh.
And it's the guy that we've been following all alone, hanging out with his son.
Yeah.
He's the state police.
Yeah, so...
And he just die on the side of the street unceremoniously, like just
also a very tense happens. Scene. All of this movie is tense. It's good. It's real good.
This movie's a masterclass to build suspense.
When he kills the whole dude's family, just three shells, his wife and his two boys, and then he tells him, "Go ahead, finish your meal."
Yeah.
Oh, but that scene.
Fucked up.
It was the fact that he kills the father just before getting there tells you that there's no mercy anymore. He's going to kill everything that is in his path. So when the bad guys start to try to get to his morality, like not in front of my children, when you know he threw his daughter in acid, of course he's going to kill everyone before him.
The youngest Bond villain of all time, Benicio del Toro in License to Kill.
We're going to give your wife an honeymoon.
Yeah.
God, he was bad in that movie.
But there he is. And again, you could do a whole film festival of drug movies with Benicio del Toro.
That's called typecasting.
Yeah, and Josh Brolin. But again, we were saying it's a masterclass in how you make an action movie. Oddly enough, watching this, it feels more mainstream than Blade Runner 2049, which is the big budget mainstream movie. But I guess that's why they're making a sequel to this and not.
Well, this made a lot of money, man. That came out.
Well, it did. Off a $30 million budget, it made 84. So that's almost 85. So that's good.
And
it earned a sequel.
That's fun that you bring up the budget, because I was watching the movie and I was like, you can do this. You see, I overshot. I was like, you can do this for 45 millions with the people that are in there. 30?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Get Roger Deakins. That's where you put your money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Making it look good. Yeah. The music, which is almost not music, it's very...
It's very Blade Runner.
Yeah, yeah. Johan Johansson doing the sound.
I was surprised to see she didn't do Blade Runner, actually.
Good. Again, Emily Blunt, good actress. We're going to talk about her later in Trailer Dump, but nice to see a female lead in a film like this.
And it was fun to see a female lead treated. She was just treated as a character because her sexuality was used as she is a woman, but they didn't use that to create her character,
right?
Which was very refreshing of everything we're seeing right now, even with all the discussion around.
If they did it all, they flushed it out by her having a joke with her partner when he said, "You need a new bra."
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even a sexual thing. They joked around about how she doesn't, you know, it's just, she's so busy with her life and yada yada. I don't know. She didn't even become a sexual creature, even when she danced and drank and was going to take home the Punisher. That wasn't even like a thing.
Exactly. They didn't make her a sexual creature. They make her a creature with sexuality, which is a big difference. And it's very
true.
It's very refreshing.
She never does this. It's not who she is.
Yep.
A lot of good stuff here. Nice palate cleanser from Video Game Movie Month. Even though it did have some video game-esque scenes when they're raiding the dungeon there, doing their dungeon crawl.
Yeah, I can see what your point, because it's in third person and it's in black and white or gray and
first person.
Yeah, it's first person, but they didn't work the tension like a video game.
They didn't make it
that
a gimmick.
Was fun. Yeah, exactly.
Just like when they were on the back of the trucks, though, to go do the extraction from Juarez and back.
Yes. Yep.
Get to the checkpoint.
Right. Check the rooftops.
Yeah. It's good. We got a spotter car.
That's very Grand Theft Auto.
It was also very Black Hawk Down when they're going Black in Hawk for Down, the final extraction to pull the people out.
Agreed.
Far Cry. It's right there. Yeah, good stuff.
Anybody got any more notes?
It's not a big note movie, because if you take the movie and you actually like break it down, not much happens.
No,
a lot of the movie is in the performance, which is very subtle and beautiful.
Yeah, and I would say the only plot twist is kind of what you knew all along, which is he's CIA and they're going to go about it in a non-traditional manner, we'll say.
Yeah, he never wants to say that he's CIA, but as soon as they start crossing the border, I was like, he's CIA Special Ops. Okay, sure, go. I'm ready to rate this.
Rate it.
All right, Wing for Sicario. Are you going Legendary?
No Country for Old Men.
Legend of Its Time.
Traffic.
Cult Legend.
Maria Full of Grace.
Awesome.
Low.
Entertaining.
End of Watch.
Mayable.
Borderland.
Forgettable.
Two Guns.
Abysmal.
Savages.
Spring Breakers. Highlander. D&D.
Machete Kills.
With a Side of Nostalgia. Guilty Pleasure. Tingle. Barf. Tears.
I don't have a With a Side of, because it's Villeneuve. It's good. It's fine.
Yeah, With a Side of... Well, With a Side of Quebec Filmmaker.
Yeah, let's there say you go. That. Side of Poutine.
I have to say that your movie specific, I would not have put in the same order that you did.
I totally did that arbitrarily, and I understand that you may not agree with all of those. My point was, this is a genre of film.
Yep.
And I could have listed 20 more, probably some also starring Benicio Del Toro. I know I didn't put 21 Grams on the list because I haven't seen it, but Escobar, whatever. Like, you can go down the list of movies about drug running and the border and so on.
Yeah, but I love Machete Kills. I'm gonna give it a solid awesome. I don't think it redefined the genre in any way, shape, or form. It's just a very, very, very good movie. After knowing the budget and all that, this is $30 million they give to Denis Villeneuve after Prisoner. Prisoner proved that he could direct a movie. It's not as good as Sicario. Sicario proved that he was able to make a movie that was profitable. And then Arrival proved that he could do both. Then they gave him Blade Runner, and, well, we'll see what's happening after that. But it's an awesome movie. It's all about character and development. If you're looking for an action, because we've talked about this like it's an action movie, there's like three action scenes that are around a minute long each. It's not a big action movie. That's not where you go to be impressed by the type of action you're going to see. This is the type of movie you go to be impressed by the kind of image, the kind of picture that we're showing you, by the kind of mixture of music, visual, and great acting can brings you to feel for this character and maybe understand a little bit what people from Juarez were living and what people inside the police, form of justice you want to see it. And the fact that is actually the topic of the movie is all these people have a different point of view of what they're doing and how it goes around. This is an awesome movie, and I hope we'll have more awesome movie like this in the future. Beef?
Oh, I hate that there's been a trend of this lately, but I got to follow Wing with the awesome. I don't know why I didn't see this when it came out. I was just like, I'll catch it when it comes on a streaming service, and I just never did. I saw it all the time. I never watched it, but... Yeah.
I can tell you why we decided to do Black Mass instead of that. That was a mistake.
I don't even remember that movie. What? So I had a shit ton of fun with it, and I don't even think it is about, or to add to what Wing said, is it's the feeling, too, that you get from it, the tension, the suspense, all that. You get the little bit of action scenes, but you could really see what Emily Blunt's character is going through, the ways that Benicio del Toro is trying to get to these dudes at no cost, and the way that Josh Brolin is the facilitator of making this all happen within the very, very gray and murky lines of, you know, CIA type shit. So, solid awesome, for sure. Lobster.
Yeah, I got to give props to not Denis Villeneuve first. I'm going to give it to Taylor Sheridan, who has kind of made his bread and butter making movies like this. Very deliberate, traditional movies. Not a lot of plot twists, but movies that are about developing character and seeing where the plot takes them. So this, Hell or High Water, Wind River, all kind of fit in that. And again, Denis Villeneuve is coming in here and making a movie that looks beautiful, that is showcasing the landscape, is showcasing the type of story that you can tell here. And then seeing the way that Roger Deakins can show it to us, what he can do with a camera. So I will follow both of you gentlemen and put this squarely in the awesome category.
Woohoo!
Again, I really think that this is up there with some of the best in this genre. It probably stands aside No Country for Old Men for me in the way that movies like this can look and feel and the way that they can tell a story.
All right.
All right, fellas. Last word on Sicario.
Mexico.
I like Emily Blunt.
Sicario 2, Soldado.
That is the actual title.
That is the actual title, Soldado.
Yeah. Okay, what time is it?
News time.
So, not a lot to talk about in news. Well, I should say not a lot to talk about in the box office for news because it was the Super Bowl this weekend. So mostly it's the same movies. Winchester debuted in number 3, and that was the only new release to crack the top 10 this week.
Did you hear that The Rock told a fan to go fuck himself?
What?
No. Why about would he do Jumanji? That? You can find it. There's a tweet back and forth. I think Geek Tyrant has it on there. But the fan was like, oh, I just got out of the new Jumanji and I fucking hated it, or something like that. And he said, like, no video game would let you die and then respawn with the thing that lets you win the game. Right. And then The Rock was like, he kind of like said, blah, 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 blah. Yes, if you look at, you know, paragraph 2, page 47, you could see that that clearly happens. Go fuck yourself. I was like, holy man.
Nice. Nice.
But again, it was the Super Bowl, so that means we got a lot of good trailers and a few other surprises along the way. Did you guys watch the big game?
This was my first year watching it streaming because I don't have cable, and NBC was gracious enough to give you multiple ways to watch it without cable. Nice.
I changed channel because instead of people kicking a ball, there was like a bunch of people throwing a ball and just getting in front of each other. That was a wrong game. So I just find actual football.
Like, how do they not all have fouls for doing what they do? Like,
I know
you're not supposed to touch the ball with your hands.
It's and nobody got like a yellow card or anything during the old game.
Just think of it's a variation of rugby, Wing.
Yeah, rugby is a sport for real, man.
The biggest probable surprise, I think, for all of us during the big game was that Netflix announced the surprise post-game release of the third Cloverfield movie, The Cloverfield Paradox. Now, we had talked about the rumor that it was delayed and that Netflix might pick up the rights for it, but nothing was ever confirmed, and we just imagined we would find out when we found out. Were you guys shocked or amazed that
I didn't think
Netflix pulled
it would
a stunt like this?
I didn't think it'd be 2 or 3 weeks later that all of a sudden it just showed up on there.
I found it was a great idea before I got feedback from the movie, but I was like, wow, you have, 100 million people watching that football game? And they're all aware that right after, if they want to stay on their couch and fall asleep in front of the TV, they can watch that movie right away.
Yeah.
I was like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
But then 15 minutes after the game, people started tweeting this movie was shit.
Look, okay, I'll be honest. It's not as great as the first two Cloverfield movies, and it's not even as good as the first two Cloverfield movies, but it's a reason why it was released on Netflix. It is a semi-fun, kind of okay B-rate sci-fi movie. I like B sci-fi movies, but it's not going to win any awards, and I think they did us all a service by not making anyone pay for this movie.
Yeah, pay for a movie ticket.
If you want a crappy B-rate sci-fi that actually does kind of tie the other ones together, check it out.
I have to say, I give Netflix credit for coming up with the concept of releasing a movie in the post Super Bowl time slot, which, as we know, is very coveted for TV shows. Lots of big shows.
I never thought of it that way.
Use that as a lead in. I could see them doing it later on with a series. I think that would be a creative way to do it, and say that the series goes live after the big game and kind of tease it that way. Again, the game goes on till like 10, 11 o'clock at night, depending on your time zone. And then you have to watch a movie after that. Like, I went to bed. I think most people go to bed.
I saw it the next day.
Yeah.
Netflix says that their 24-hour is out of this world right now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it worked well for them. And I hope that whatever they got for, or whatever they paid for the movie, it works out. I don't know if anyone rushed to their computer and signed up for Netflix in that between halftime and the end of the game.
The title card actually said a Netflix and Paramount production.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they paid, or if they just said, here, we'll take this off your hands. Or
yeah, the story is that they paid a lot of money to just...
I think they paid a lot, but I think Paramount knew very, very well that they weren't really going to do much with it. So
right.
Yeah. Paramount wanted to dump it somewhere, and Netflix offered just enough money so that they could both still be producer on it, and they moved really fast. So I just want to rant a second, if I may. You remember the time of Straight to Video?
Yes.
I thought Netflix will take us out of that. And the more I see the Brights, I see the Cloverfield, I see all that crap, it's the same thing.
But you're always going to need a spot like that. That's just...
It's called a sci-fi channel now.
Yeah, it's like Netflix. I watch
Leva Tarantula or crap
What does
like
it
this.
Matter if you get it on Netflix, though?
I want Netflix to be a... Right at the moment, to be a recognized platform. I want Netflix to be... No, not yet. People talk about it, but then you have like important people from the Academy, Jodie Foster, and people like that start bitching about that we're releasing movies. And I want Netflix to be a legitimate distribution method. I want at some point to have a Marvel movie to drop on the Disney service. Just like we spent $100 million on this movie, here you go. I want that to happen at some point. And by buying movies that you know people don't want to pay for in theater, I think it cheapens the not the experience, because that we know that's the experience, but it cheapens the offer that we're receiving. It cheapens the prestige of these formats. So
I will say if you want to be angry, I think you should be angry at movie theater chains and distributors who will not play ball with releasing a movie and having it simultaneously released on a streaming service. They refuse absolutely to allow that to happen. And I think until you have parity between the venue of releasing a movie in the theaters and releasing it on a streaming service, you're not going to have a level playing field. And I think for whatever amount of money Netflix wants to spend on creating original content, if it's not seen as the equal of the cinema, then you're always going to have that stigma of, well, it's just direct to video.
Yeah.
And that's what it's not like they soak up all these crappy things. They kind of do, but they were looking for content, and they're building their library. You don't have to go out and buy this direct-to-video crappy movie and watch it and then want to throw it away. You spend your $10 a month, or you borrow someone else's, and you have access to all of the gold that they have and the plethora of shit. It's just a matter of mining
it. Again, the reason
that's not the part that I'm bitching. The part that I'm bitching is that like what they did with TV. They started by producing very crappy TV, then they turned around and they became the crown jewel of series. Now, I'm watching the series. What people ask you is not on which channel it is. Is it on Netflix? That's the first answer. And here we don't have as many streaming service as you guys have. So it's really there. But for movies, we're not there. People were talking about the fact that this movie got released straight on Netflix at work today. And people were seeing that as, ooh, ouch.
I would say that the reason that direct-to-video movies were able to function is that when you went to Blockbuster to rent the new release movie that you really wanted, and you found out that all of their copies were gone, then you decided to settle for the thing with the cover that looked somewhat similar.
And a name similar.
Yeah, a name you'd kind of recognize, and then it was fine. And I think that's an okay thing for Netflix. Now, again, you have to ask yourself if you would rather never have seen this Cloverfield movie, because I think it was obvious that the studio wasn't going to release it in a wide release format, because they would end up losing money just on the distribution. So they had an opportunity to recoup the production cost, and that's the way that they went with.
Now, I know why they do it, and I'm not saying it's for Paramount. That was a great deal. That was a good idea. It's for Netflix that I'm more surprised that they actually went.
And again, I don't know if necessarily big budget is the way to go for streaming. I think you could make more movies for less money and end up making Sicario rather than Bright. That's okay.
I agree with that, and I think that's why they're king of the TV show, because you can put less money, have more content. But even if you put less money, you can put more than an ABC. You're playing with the HBOs of this world instead of playing with the
first two episodes of Altered Carbon. By the way,
the first one sucks.
The first two episodes are absolutely gorgeous. But they're beautiful to look at. The world is getting there. The first one jumps around a bit, but they expect a little bit of their audience, and that's to make some connections.
I do not agree with you at all. I think the first one introduced a bunch of ideas that I want to see explore, but all they gave me is a generic action TV show that is a gorgeous setting. I'm giving you that. The setting is very, how can we copy Blade Runner? But besides that...
See, I got the Expanse too from it, but... I don't know.
Guys, I wouldn't think it's empty. We have a ton of news. Is it okay if we transition to our next topic?
Oh,
let's talk about that Mario movie. Okay, so we can move.
Yeah, we're wrapping up our video game month. I unfortunately was not able to be on the Assassin's Creed cast, which I'm bummed about. But one of the things that we talked about was what would be the perfect movie for this video game franchise. And when we talked about Super Mario Brothers, we said that probably the way to go is an animated Mario movie. And who better to do a movie about a character who really doesn't have a good grasp on English than the people behind the Minions?
Oh, that'd be cool.
Have you seen the Minion movie?
Despicable Me, the Minions. I have not seen any of those movies, but I know that they exist.
I'm going to actually tell you, watch the Despicable Me 1.
Okay.
And stop.
Oh,
The first one is actually a very Pixar level movie. Everything that comes after is kids movie. It's what it is. I don't know what they want Mario to be. I think you want Mario to be a kind of a Wreck-It Ralph, since you have Super Smash Brothers and all that jazz already existing on the console. But they seem decided to make a movie about Mario in the real world, and I don't understand how you can do that except do an hour and a half Italian racist joke.
There we go. That would be good. Again, I'll hold out hope to see what this can do. But again, I think they could do the animation in a decent way. Beef, what do you think?
Again, it's a blank story. I don't know. Well, they could tell a bunch of plumber jokes too. I mean, does Mario even fix toilets anymore? Is he even a plumber?
No, he's not a plumber anymore. He's an ex-plumber.
Oh, well, so yeah, I don't know.
He's sex plumber? Hold on. What?
Yes, he's a sex plumber.
That's not a plunger in his fucking belt.
Whoa.
That's why he's trying to find Peach.
Men in Black reboot done by F. Gary Gray.
Don't care.
Oh, okay.
I'm at the point where Men in Black, the old franchise, is one movie and two very, very bad redo of the same shit?
Apparently this wouldn't be a reboot and they're gonna, you know, like have the letters be later than J and K, and they'd even include a female this time.
Ooh.
I know. I don't know. Care. The first one was fun, but you're right.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So Arnold Schwarzenegger is in talks to do a Western series, Outrider, at Amazon.
A period piece Western. Oh, of course, yes, it's a Western. Shut up, Beef.
So, oddly enough, Amazon just canceled JCVD or Jean-Claude Van Johnson or whatever it is. Yeah. So Arnold will be the next washed-up action star to land an Amazon series.
If they could actually produce American Gods so that we get a season 2 instead of doing this, that would be great, yeah.
Cool.
Because right now everybody's dropping of that show, and I'm very sad.
Game of Thrones creators to write, produce new Star Wars series of films. That's not George R. R. Martin. That's David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. So they're going to do a series of Star Wars films, which is separate from the new series that Rian Johnson is
putting
together. Yes. And this is neither one apparently going to be a continuation of the Skywalker saga.
Okay.
I think they're gonna put the Skywalker saga on pause for like 10 years, telling us that it's done. And then they're going to try to do another Force Awakens in like 10, 15 years. Like, oh, it's back.
Of course, it's Disney. They put shit in a vault and then re-release it all the time.
Daisy Ridley is old now.
What are we... I don't know how to feel about this. I really don't know how to feel with these two guys doing it. I love Game of Thrones, but these guys don't have a thing to... a roadmap now. They're just going to create it? What have they done before this?
I don't think they're going to do the Confederate show anymore because that got very heavy backlash and then disappeared. So I think they thought, why not do what they're good at, which is creating long-form stories about dynasties with swordplay and things like that and some magic. So I think it makes sense to have them do a Star Wars story or series of stories. And again, it sounds like they're going to write and produce. They're not going to be the directors attached to it. That'll come later.
I guess when you put all those words together in that order, it makes sense.
It's funny because I'm reading what Confederate was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing in the Star Wars universe.
You absolutely could. It's going to
even raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, you absolutely could. You could totally do slavery in Star Wars and it wouldn't
be. You put Wookiees instead of slave. Yep. And you know, and the fact that Star Wars is based on the Civil War anyway.
We don't have to go too far into it to see. It's going to carry over pretty well.
The only thing I'm afraid with these news right now, and I think Disney is becoming the new Warner, not Disney, but Star Wars, because right now they're in the development phase.
Yeah.
As a film fan, I understand that paper costs nothing. You are a bunch of writers, a bunch of idea guys. You put them in a room, then you pick the two or three that seems good. Look at how we were excited about the writer's room on Transformer before we've got Transformer 5. So this is what they're doing right now. They have Rian Johnson's going to come up with something. They're going to come up with something. A bunch of people are going to come up with shit. And basically, then they're going to be like, this is good.
Basically, they want to keep making movies.
No.
And I think they want to avoid the narrative of, you know, there was a certain segment that didn't like The Last Jedi. Solo may or may not be good or not. Like, and I think there's a loss of momentum, or there's the risk of the loss of momentum. And we're seeing that at Warner Brothers. We're seeing that at, you know, the DC franchise, where right now it's kind of just the status quo. There's not a bunch of new stuff that people are excited about, and they're not really excited about seeing more of the same stuff we've already had. So I think that if you bring in some hip young talent that are wrapping up a big, big series.
So we can fire HBO, them.
Yeah, so we can fire them, exactly, to hate them and get rid of them. But I, like you said, I don't think it costs them to bring in some experienced writers who have development experience in exactly this type of genre to see what they come up with.
Aren't we afraid?
If I may, as a writer, I've been in these kind of writer's room a lot. I never seen anything come out of them. So it's,
aren't we afraid, though, that at some point in time, now bear with me for 2 seconds, that the market, quote-unquote, is going to get saturated with too much Star Wars?
Oh, you know how we can answer that question really fast? See, people were pissed about The Force Awakens. Then there's there's 2 minutes of Solo trailer that comes out. Everybody forgot that they were pissed. 2 minutes of good trailer comes out, that the movie's good or not right now, people are forgot why they were pissed.
I guess my real question is how long until this becomes the Marvel or the superhero burnout, where at Captain America or Doctor Strange or Star Wars 14, you stop seeing this one or that one.
You have 20-something Marvel movie, except me, that don't go see them anymore.
I don't go see all of them in the theater either. I've burnt out as well, and I do we do a podcast
on.
No, Black Panther.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. Okay, but there's a handful of them I haven't seen.
Listen to what you're saying. You're saying us as geek, when we were starved before and now we live in a fucking buffet, we're like, oh, I'm going to watch this one at home and not. But Black Panther is probably going to beat Civil War, which makes no sense.
I understand.
So they're making it work with different people. My mom all of a sudden is excited about Black Panther.
But there's still a handful of movies we did that didn't clear all those amounts of money that a lot of people didn't go see. A lot of people didn't see Doctor Strange. A lot of people, like, I don't know. I just think at some point in time it might get to be too much.
It's because we're so trained here at Legends Podcast, where we talk about millions of dollars every week. A Doctor Strange that makes $65 million on the first weekend is good. A Thor Ragnarok that makes $120 million is an exception.
Yeah,
and that's what people don't understand anymore. If a first introduction of a superhero movie, let's take Ant-Man. Ant-Man did really, really well, but the first weekend did not. Did okay. In the end, the movie did what any good Marvel movie should do, around $500 million. How many people are going to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp now?
Looks good. It's good. What's your name? I'm excited.
Evangeline Lilly. I love her.
It's fine.
So when it's not a movie called Avenger...
I wasn't here last week to talk about the trailer for Ant-Man. And I will go on the record as saying I was mad by it. I was like, okay, you showed some things shrinking and getting bigger. There was some character beats in it that were not unexpected, and it looks serviceable. Anyway, I really, really want to talk about all the trailers that we have, and I think a perfect segue, because we were talking about expanding the Star Wars franchise, is Solo, A Star Wars Story. The official teaser dropped with the Super Bowl ad, and what do we think?
It's like all Star Wars, they make amazing trailer. This trailer gave them a lot of goodwill. Now, do I take this trailer as cash and thinking that the movie's going to be good? You know what? At this point, I have no idea what this movie's going to look like. But Ehrenreich in this trailer is on Solo, and that's all that was important for me.
Oh, and it starts with like a car chase scene. A land speeder.
Got a pop soundtrack to
it. I love it. I am so... It looks like a lot of fun, but, you know, we'll see what the fuck. Because we have nothing to expect. We know what he becomes in 30 years, but... Or whatever.
30? Like 10.
Whatever, shut
up. I know that I said this before, that there were people who were sweating the fact that we hadn't seen a trailer for this yet. And I think that the takeaway is that we didn't need to see the trailer. We knew what it was. And again, there's nothing in the trailer that I found surprising. Like, it's stuff that I expected would be there. It shows us Woody Harrelson. It shows us Emil Clarke character.
They show you the two most important things.
Donald Glover was in there, and Han and Chewie. We got it.
The Falcon. Again, the Falcon looks all crisp and new.
I don't like the new Falcon. It doesn't have like the U shape in the middle. I find that weird.
It's the showroom clean.
I know.
It's got that new Star Cruiser smell.
Uh-huh.
I know, but I was looking at the poster and I was like, I'm used to have that fork and.
We'll get there. Something's going to happen and they got to fix it.
And I have to love the fact that they closed the trailer with the line, hey, you thought we were in trouble for a second, but we're fine. We're fine.
Right. She's still snarky.
Which is kind of like, it sums up what we were all kind of worried about with this was, I think they're in trouble. Oh, no, we're fine. We're fine.
It's just like that. We told you what's going to happen. It's not what you think.
Yeah. But my favorite part is when Emilia Clarke told him, you know what you are. And we know that they're going to say scoundrel or something like that. But his face, he goes from the super Han Solo smirk to, oh, did what I just said, is that okay? Yeah, his face changed, right? I was like, okay, he's not trying, when he's speaking, he's not trying to be Harrison Ford, but he has the same inflection here and there, the same kind of expression. I was like, I'm sold on.
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark with this is Alden Ehrenreich's acting and the proof.
And the 2 minutes they gave me is okay.
We'll see. Again, we'll see. Mission Impossible, inevitably, Fallout. Again, this is Henry Cavill's mustache is really all I have to say about this.
It's an amazing trailer. Can't wait to see the movie. Henry Cavill looks amazing.
These things are stupid because the last like four of them I am liking a lot. So yeah why not?
They zeroed in. They kind of did this thing where Mission Impossible 1 was its own thing. Mission Impossible 2 was its own thing. J.J. Abrams came in and did Mission Impossible 3. And then they're like, you know what? We're just going to do, you know, kind of the same movie again and again. And that actually works better.
You know, when you have a franchise and it's not working, what you need is Dr. JJ. So he just like give it a little bit of energy to that franchise, and then he walks away and it works by itself.
Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, all good stuff.
Yeah. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom looks like shit.
I do not know what to make of this because trailer one was a little underwhelming. Trailer two is off the rails bonkers.
Yeah,
I don't.
So,
what the fuck? Why are we going back to the real world? Didn't the last time we? I have so many things wrong with this. Didn't the last time we created a dinosaur that was really evil and bad? Now they created a more eviler and badderer.
Badder, even still.
And now it's back to Jurassic World 2 or 3 when they took dinosaurs back to the mainland.
Lost World.
Yeah, exactly. It gave me the same feeling as the Lost World, and I was like, this is not good.
Yeah.
No.
This is not. I am not interested in that whatsoever. That next one, though, Beef, I think you're going to have company on your cast if it's that good.
Westworld Season 2, and they start playing the piano remix of the Kanye West song, which, damn it. If they keep doing all those pianos. Yes. If they keep doing all those piano covers, I'm sold, and this looks amazing. There's just shit online that says apparently they have a total, you know, their websites. It says they have a total of 6 Westworld parks in development. So that means potential different. Yeah.
April 22nd, and that is the traditional Game of Thrones release slot. In April. So I think they are setting themselves up to be the thing that we're obsessed with when Game of Thrones ends.
I already am.
They do as well as the last season. I'm good. Just don't do that Walking Dead shit where after season 4 we're all like, oh yeah, that show used to be good. I think it was good.
If you want to hear me babble about it, go to westworldweekly.com.
Avengers Infinity War also got a big game spot. We saw the reveal of the thing that was spoiled by the action figure, which is Captain America's new shield. That looks cool.
That's a shield?
Yeah. Give this man the shield.
I thought that was two, like a gauntlet. I thought it was like a gauntlet or something.
Yeah.
a friend of mine that has seen Black Panther already tells me that I'm going to understand all about the shield once I get out of Black Panther. So
okay. This looks good. I think that's good timing for them. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is Avengers Infinity War and Solo are coming out in the same month from the same company. And
we have Deadpool in between.
And you have Deadpool in between. So I think have to give each other a degree of respect. And they want Infinity War to be huge as possible. But they also want to leave a little bit left in the tank so that at the end of the month, people go see Solo.
And to be honest, Solo is a test that they're making. They want to see if May is viable or if they claim Christmas until the end of time.
Yeah, and again, you can go back a year and look at how Pirates of the Caribbean did when right after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So,
yeah.
A Quiet Place. Again, this is a movie that I still want to see. The big game spot.
I keep forgetting about it, so that's why I threw this in there.
Yeah. Okay, now that Crocodile Dundee sequel.
Yes.
I'm happy to say that I was right.
I still want it to be a real movie. I do not care what anyone says.
Be careful what you wish for.
That's what I mean. I hope enough people bid on it. So many people sent in shit. People loved it so much that this fucker will get kickstarted.
Yeah.
I would say, unfortunately,
the number one way to get them to make this movie is to go to Australia and spend money and say, I'm here because you made that Dundee commercial. Now give me my goddamn movie.
Right, give me my goddamn Dundee movie.
Again, I know we had enough like fun joke for 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was good.
Can you do an hour and a half though on that concept?
So I recently watched all of Vice Principals, which is the film or the HBO series with Danny McBride. Vice Principals is awesome, and you should watch it. This goes for Beef as well, if you haven't seen it.
I watched the first season. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. And I think there's a space in there for the mouthy American son of Dundee who goes to Australia and acts like he's tough shit, but it's just a reverse of Dundee coming to America and being the fish out of water. I think you could pull it off. I think that there's a movie there that you could make that would be kind of fun. But the commercial was fun too. I've always wanted to visit Australia, and maybe now I will go.
Yes, they have more kangaroos now that
they have wineries, guys. Yeah, nice restaurant.
That is true.
Most of the country will kill you, but still,
don't get left out at night.
Do you guys know about the story? It's kind of an urban legend.
About the bathroom? Yes, I know. They go the other way.
So somewhere back in the 70s or 80s, this doomsday cult got their hands on a black market nuclear device and accidentally set it off at their headquarters in the Australian outback. And no one noticed, except seismologists around the world.
Is that true?
Yeah, who noticed? Well, again, it's like one of those urban legends, right? Like the outback is so big that you could accidentally detonate a nuclear device, and the only thing that would notice would be seismographs around the world.
No, stop lying to me. Now I gotta look this up.
Yeah, again, Dundee, make it a real movie. I don't care.
From the Express, the Sunday Express in 2017, December, Australia, still totally radioactive after blowing British nuclear in 1950s.
Yeah, whatever.
Wow.
Tons of news. We talked way more about that than we did our actual movie this week, but it's fine.
Yeah, but you should watch the movie we talked about.
Sicario.
You
should watch the movie that we're talking about next week, which is...
It's my birthday movie.
Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Tights.
Woo! And then you laugh after that month of crap. Now we just like change the taste in our mouth with Sicario. Now let's laugh with a good Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks, yeah.
And then let's go to Ragnarok because after I seen that movie, we need to talk about it now.
Ragnarok.
Okay.
This has been episode 359 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, damn, the border looks tough.
I'm John D. saying, damn, Westworld looks good.
I'm John O'Lobster saying, that's a knife.
Just shaving with my machete.
Shaving with my machete.
Machete kill! Machete kill!
Ooh. Bring it full circle.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, GunnaGeek, or KrakenCast. No infringement is intended.